7. You said that two of you have been taken away from the main group.
Yes. We're from the airplanes. They thought he was a pilot.
And why did they send you with him?
Well, I don't really know. They must have just grouped us together. And we were kept one guard just to the two of us.
Just before we go any further, was this kind of work not looked at upon as war work, which prisoners weren't supposed to do?
Well, that was early days, I suppose. They didn't consider anything like that. They just had you do what they wanted. I mean, at first, when we were first in, everybody had to salute a German soldier, a German private. And I mean, you could see some of the first Germans we had to deal with. It was only, he had a little star on his arm, and that only ranked as a trained soldier. And yet the other chaps treated him like a sergeant. You know, he carried a revolver and sort of thing, but they had umpteen ranks before you got the sergeant, you know, the Germans. And they did away with this, some of these ranks. They did away with this trained soldier rank, you know. There was too many of those. But anyway, back to where we were, and we were working with this Kaiser's Batman. And he was telling in his own way, in the First War, what a good time they had with the Kaiser. They were well fed and well looked after. And they brought the newspaper in. And it was the same, I'd never been to London then, and the same picture on the front as what that logo on EastEnders, the River Thames bending, taken from German bombers bombing them. And the headlines were, "Hail of Bombs on London." And they were shown in these newspapers, like, and we felt it well. There's nothing we could do about it. And the Luftwaffe was marching up and down the roads, and this new song came out, "When We're Going Against England, Foreign Gig in England," you know, that sort of thing. And our morale wasn't very high at the time. But on a Saturday night or at night time, we would get one of the chaps up on the stage telling jokes and stories, and it'd cheer you up a little bit. And one day we were marching, this must have been about August, you know, getting on to September. One day we were marching up to this, through this village, to back to where we were. And I said to him, "There's a sweet in the gutter, a little boy sweet, see?" To my mate, because you used to march in fives, because the Germans weren't good counters. They used to like make it easy for themselves. And we watched out. It was gradually getting dusk, and we watched out for that sweet on the way back. We thought about nothing else all day. See? And we got that sweet, and probably some kid had dropped it out of his mouth, or a dog, or anything. It was just lying in the gutter. And we cut that in half, that little boiled sweet, and we enjoyed that. It was, you know, anything for a change. And
what time did your working day start?
Well, pretty early morning, cup of coffee and off. And you worked till about 6, 7 at night, you know.
And the guards that you had by now were the older men at reservists, or...?
No, at that time that was 40. No, they were, I would say, regular troops.
And they treated you all right, did they?
Well, the guards, aye. They weren't too bad.
Were you able to talk with them and discuss things with them, were you? In your own way, of course.
Very little, aye, very little.
And the food you were getting was just the same as you...
Just the same, aye. A bowl of soup. Yeah, they gave us a little wash basin, bowl of soup. And you got the civilian bread there. And they gave us a loaf the first year, civilian loaf, you know, about that long. They didn't tell us, well, no that it's had to last you 2 days. So we said, oh, good eats were scoffed the show and nothing the next day. So we had to learn the hard way. And then
had you sent your information home by now to your relatives?
I think, yes, I think we had wrote to them. But we had no letters back or anything.
Nothing coming back?
No.
At this stage?
No books, nothing to read.
No Red Cross yet?
No Red Cross, no. And they had a German paper, The Camp, and it was printed in English, and it was telling you, it says, we'll always tell you the truth, no matter how bad it is for us or your side, which of course was a load of rubbish. And anyway, showing you pictures of the Channel Islands being taken over and, you know.
Had you a feeling that they'd won the war at this point, that you wouldn't be long before you...
Well, some chaps were saying. We've had it. Some real doubters were saying that. And we used to march out to this place on a morning and pass the little police station at the end of the village. And there was a big map on the wall. And it showed you the British Isles alone. And right away down from the tip of Norway, right away down Poland, France, Belgium, Germany, right away to the tip of France, you know, Bay of Biscay. That was all against this little island. It looked as if, you know, we didn't stand much of a chance. And
did you feel optimistic that England wouldn't last, continue?
Well, you kept hoping. And there was always this propaganda among the chaps. Oh, the Canadians are fighting in France, and that was a load of rubbish as well. But you know, hearing things, and the sergeant major in this camp, there was Scottish a lot with us, and he was able to hear sometimes the radio, and he got word he'd heard how the Greeks at that time were driving the Italians into the sea in, is it Albania? I think they'd taken Albania, the Italians, hadn't they? And they were driving them out. And the Greeks were definitely beating the Italians.
I was going to ask you how the camp discipline went. How many of the people were you together in this working camp?
Well, I imagine about probably 400 or something like that.
And you were still subjected to British Army discipline?
No, we were German discipline. I mean, they even had German orders, like quick march and...
I'm thinking in terms of, was there a senior British NCO in charge of all of you under the Germans?
Exactly, yes. And they...
And this was the chap you were talking about, was it? This
aye, he was a Scotsman. And of course, I was telling you about this turnip field. And we're going to this turnip field. And that was the most embarrassing moment of my life. Because I'd said to this German, the guard, I was going over to do my business. And he just let us go. And a Polish woman come from one of the local houses near. And I tried to ask her, she couldn't understand what I was talking about, for some bread, you know. And while I was trying to do that, the German guard came looking, see. So I told him what I was going to do. So the Polish woman was standing there chatting to the German guard, and I had to sit down in between them and pretend I was doing what I was still supposed to be doing. But anyway, that got over. And then we went back to, we carried on in this camp, and chaps were having bread stolen, you know. Being given a loaf to hide it away for the next day, there was bread stealing. So they eventually caught one chap and they said, right, anybody who's had bread stolen, 2 ranks, anything you had, your mess tin, anything you could hit them with. And he had to run the gauntlet through this, see. Well, that got over.
And that was your own discipline?
Own discipline, yes.
What about chaps who were breaking under the stress and strain of the situation, being all these thousands of miles away and probably being defeated? Were there men who were...
No, they seemed to carry on. And we always...
Depression and illnesses, was that creeping?
Well, you had chaps with dysentery and things like that. But mostly, you had your sense of humour kept you going, sort of thing. You always had your sense of humour. And there was one book, and it was the kind of book you wouldn't read in here, you know, very boring sort of stuff. But it went from hand to hand, and everybody read it. And when we were marching down the road, we would say, well, how's this roadie getting on? It was, you know... And it was rubbish. It's the kind of book you wouldn't read here. And little things like that.
You were getting some kind of organisation in the camp. Was this the point where you were making things from tins or whatever you could get hold of?
Oh, not up
you
to that.
You hadn't
reached that standard yet. And we eventually, I think we got a little soap. And we had big, like these washtubs, big wooden vats. And we had a bath night. It was only once in a blue moon, like. Why? And then we were taken to Gdynia for delousing. And in Gdynia, they had these big steam boilers. It was a proper place. And the funny thing, the chaps who were doing the delousing, we didn't recognise them because they were in these big overalls and hoods on. They were British prisoners of war as well. So anyway, they were telling us the ropes. And after that, when chaps went towards it out, they used to stuff the pockets with potatoes. And after they came out the steam boiler, they were steamed potatoes after the delousing. Because before that, it was common practice for you to just sit on your bed. It was a pastime, that, and just nipping all the lice out the seams of your clothing and things like that.
At what point did you get mail from home? When did that start coming to you?
Well, I think that was just before we left. I got a letter from home, and we were there from July. It was getting on to the winter, to probably beginning of November. And winter starts early in Poland.
And were conditions changing then, obviously, with the cold weather? Were you warm in your camp, in your billets?
Well, we had no overcoats or anything like that. Oh, warm enough inside. And they issued us with a second set of battle dress.
And was that British battle dress?
Oh, yes, British battle dress. Because they had captured a lot of that. And, of course, I think the Red Cross would send some through as well. And we had one Red Cross parcel, but that was between 16 chaps.
What was in it?
Well, tea and sugar and things like that, and they decided to take the tea in your group of 16 and make a drink of tea, see, and the rest was shared out between every two, and I got half a little soup cube. That was my share of the parcel, and chaps, you know, two men would share a tin or whatever it was, whichever, you drew cards for it. And then they issued with this battle dress. one chap had lost a pair of battle dress trousers. See? Well, by that time, the punishment was getting strict for chaps who were stealing, you know. It was very strong in the German army against thieving, but this was internal discipline. So they got this chap. Well, they had an outside toilet. Well, it was just a hole with a concrete well, you know, just like a well in a garage. And that's the sluice. And the Germans used to come, and, or the Poles used to come and pump them out. And that went on the fields, down the farms. So this chap was seen going through the night to the outside toilet, and so he knew he was going to get searched, and he'd thrown these battle dress trousers down the toilet. So they got him, and they pushed him down the toilet all day, and was plodging about like that, you know.
Thigh deep.
Aye. Well, not thigh deep, but why? Upper thighs. And there he was, and they kept him down there all day. It was being terrible. It was getting really cruel. They'd given him a good hiding first. But he had to go down and retrieve these trousers. So when they got out, when they, he got out, you know, he was, they eventually allowed him out. He says, "I'm not fit to associate with you." And they said, "You're not. You're robbing me, you know, and all this." Nobody had any sympathy for him. Anyway, we got over that.
Did you know this chap personally?
Oh, aye, why, yes, we were all, well, you just know him by sight, acquaintance.
He wasn't a Durham Light Infantry man?
Oh, no, no. No, there was very few Durham Light Infantry about. It was only me and my mate, as I knew about, in this. Because you were mixed up with all sorts of different regiments. And we thought, the way it was going to go, that somebody get killed, the way this harsh discipline was going. But then the winter took a hand, and we were moved. And we were moved in cattle trucks back to Thorn. It was a good journey, like. And while you're in the trucks at night, the studs and the metalwork on the inside of the truck turned white with the frost, you know. The Polish winter was just starting. We had no idea what it was like. And anyway, we got eventually into a place called Fort 15 in Poland. And it was, well, the forts weren't bad.
Can you describe a fort for me?
Well, the forts, they must have been built, I would imagine, at about the time of the Franco-Prussian War. And they were flat forts, you know. There was nothing above ground. It was all below ground. There was an outer wall, and you got through this outer wall onto a drawbridge across this moat and through some big iron gates, and there was nothing shown above ground. It was, I'm talking about above the top of the wall. And then your cold house and everything was downstairs, and your toilets and everything. And they used to, the Poles used to come and pump that out as well for to go on the ground. And then from there.
The billets, the rooms that you slept in the fort, were they comfortable?
Well, they had this, we were crowded in. When you laid at night, you covered the whole floor. And if you wanted to go for a night visit, you had to walk on somebody to get out, see? And you had one blanket each.
And were you still on palliasse?
No.
Beds?
No, just on the bare floor. And they had the stove on the wall, you know, this the old German stove with the fancy tiles, that sort of thing. They were well designed, these forts, and we had to go out in the morning, early morning, and work on a on a road, working on an autobahn from Thorn to Warsaw. And when he used to go out on the morning, the wind used to catch you, and it was just like rubbing sandpaper on your face. It was really bitter. And the best of it was, I didn't even have a shirt. I can't remember where it had gone, but I had no shirt, just me battle dress blouse. And they'd given us old German overcoats by then. And they're a light affair, you know, a German overcoat. It's more dress than warmth. And they were dyed like a very dark blue. There was an old palliasse I got hold of. Oh, we must have had palliasses then, yeah. An old palliasse. And I made a shirt out of it. No sleeves. And I just cut the end for my neck to stick through. Because I'd got to hold some needle and thread before of this this Kaiser's Batman. That. And we... That's what I wore for a long time, till eventually I got a shirt. And let's see now, while we were in there, we were in there over the Christmas. And you had a bit better meal at Christmas in that fort. It was one of the best forts by all we'd heard.
When you say a bit better meal, can you recall what you got?
Just for Christmas Day, well, thicker soup, that's all. The soup was almost soup, was thicker. But we did get issues of cigarettes, the English cigarettes. Somehow or another, they must have got through. And tobacco. We got some tobacco. And things, you know, looked up for the Christmas. And then it got on to the New Year.
It must have been a very... painful time Christmas, knowing where you were and where your families were.
Oh yes, it was, but you just...
Did thoughts of home come a great deal into your lives during this time?
Well, you would try to put them out of your life because you just, you were all in the same boat. And then it got on to the New Year, and I remember the New Year, my mate and me, just on the point of New Year, we went out and these big metal doors were open. And the snow was all over on the ground, the New Year. And standing in the middle of the drawbridge was a German guard, police rifle. And on the point of midnight, he lifted up and he fired Vary lights. Four white Vary lights and one red one for 41 was the New Year of 41. Well, into 41, I was picked for a party to move. You had no choice, you know. They just picked your number out and you had to go there. And we were put in cattle trucks and sent... This was getting on into 41 and sent to Graudenz. Well, that's the German name for the Polish, Grudziądz it is, and it was a German barrack town, and we had been formed without any knowledge into a German labour battalion that worked for the German army. See, we'd worked for the Luftwaffe, and now we were working for the German army, and we were in this town, and that's where I had the photograph taken. In this, we were in an old First War German barracks, and that accommodation wasn't too bad because you packed in, you know, you were crowded, about 100 or 150 to a room, and your big, your beds 3 and 4 high, you know,
bunk beds
high, slotted into one another. And then we were taking in parties out on the working parties out of this camp. And we were taken to a German hospital, and right on the outskirts of the German hospital near the wall, there was a small group of us taken, maybe it was about half a dozen of us, and they pushed a trowel into my hand and said, "You're a bricklayer." They found out I wasn't. But I still kept on there, and we were on this party. And what
were you doing bricklaying there?
Well, it was this big empty wooden hut that they were making into a German VD clinic for the German soldiers.
Did they tell you this?
Oh yeah, we found that out. And on the door of this empty place was a big notice: "For Judenhunds, entrance forbidden. For Jewish dogs, entrance forbidden." On that, I don't know why anybody would want to go into an empty place, but there we are. And when we were marching through the village of this place, you know, there was only certain days that the Poles were allowed to shop. Only on certain days, probably about 2 days a week, Tuesday and Thursday. Polish money was done away with, you know, the zloty and things like that. And German only spoken. See? Well, they did speak Polish amongst themselves, but they had to speak German when there was a German there.
Did you see any cruelty towards the Polish people?
Well, not really, but was more or less hidden from us, that, I suppose. When we were on this doing the airstrip, there was a Pole working with us as well on with them, and he had a lovely house. And my mate drew a picture of it and had some cranes and coloured it in for this chap. And he was evicted from that house, and a German got it. Couldn't show where he went. He was just into trucks and probably sent to a labour camp or something. That was the first lot we saw. Then where did we go to there? We were
working for the Germans. Had they introduced camp money for payment for what you were doing?
Sometimes and sometimes not. Very rarely. In this camp where we were working for the German army, we didn't get paid. At Graudenz, we didn't get paid. But we were working quite a while on this, you know, building partitions and things like that, whitewashing the walls and all this sort of thing. And one day, this Pole used to come in. He'd been a Polish corporal in the army working with us. And he used to buy bread and bring it in for us in a cement sack. It was all dusted with cement, but you didn't bother about that. And the guard, one day, he was marching back to camp, and there was a Scottish bloke there, and he a bit cheeky. So the guard says, "I'm taking you to the guard room," more or less to that point. "You've had it. You get your bread taken off you and everything." He says, "I know you've got bread." So we thought, "Well, we'll for it this time." And he said, "We saw you lying asleep when we were getting the bread. And we'll tell them that, tell the officer that, because the German officer could speak English." So he got to the guardroom door and took us straight back into camp. So we got away with that lot. And then, let's say no. We were working on various jobs around this German hospital and the German barracks. And we used to go into the German barracks where the German soldiers were, into their barrack rooms and everything. And we saw how they lived and how they laid the kit out and everything. And frontline soldiers were coming into this barrack town, moving on into Russia. Because by that time, it was near the Russian campaign, you know, 41.
Moving to the summer of 41.
Yes. And they were more or less preparing to invade Russia, but not telling them. They had a peace